This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Speak Up Effective Communication, the show on the Aftermarket Radio Network focused on our communication and leadership skills. And I have in our episode today two special guests joining me. One of them, my brother, Sean O'Neill. The other, Matt Fonslow, fellow host on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Both of them are diagnostic technicians, specialists, if you will. And they have a lot of interesting insight, well, on a number of things, but we're going to try to talk about the role of diagnostics in our industry and how to help people get started on a road that I hope leads to mastery. So we'll hear from Matt and Sean on their earlier days in the industry while they were learning some of their skills, and we'll get to hear from them directly. Before we introduce our guests, I do want to introduce a word of the day. The word of the day is nebulous. And we'll define that word for you after we hear a word from our sponsors who make this show possible. With the Institute's coaching, leave a legacy that endures. Foster careers and drive community impact. Start your journey today at weareTheInstitute.com/business-assessment. AutoFlow is your partner in technology. With AutoFlow, enhance your client interactions in a single thread before, during, and after the visit. To see how AutoFlow makes it simple, visit AutoFlow.com. Your trusted companion, Shop Dog Marketing, is right by your side, attracting the best customers and building long-term growth. Call Shop Dog Marketing today or visit ShopDogMarketing.com. Unlock your communication insights with Inbound's AI-powered call analytics for auto repair shops. Learn more at CallInbound.com. Are you passing along credit card fees to your customers? No one likes that. Express is the only 0% fee alternative to credit card surcharging. Visit myexpress.io. Okay, we're back. And before we introduce our guests, we'll review the word of the day is nebulous. It is a formal word, an adjective used to describe something that is difficult to see, understand, or describe. In other words, something indistinct or vague. Diagnostics, understanding the true workings of an automobile and troubleshooting, it seems very nebulous and difficult and challenging. And so are the people who master it. So we'll introduce our guests now. Thanks for joining me, Matt and Sean. You are my guests today. This is a real honor to have you guys take some time out of your busy days to join me on the podcast here talking about communication in our wonderful aftermarket. And we've been in this for a while now. You two have been inspirational, truly, to me, dragging me into the whole network, really, of people that I now can call friends.
So you're the one that stole them. They used to be my friends.
I haven't talked to these clowns in a long time. Matt included.
You see, this is the thing. It has been too long.
I had all these friends, and then, hey, this is Sean's younger brother, Craig.
Yeah, we like
you're
him
friends
more.
With him and not me.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. You two were friends before I did. So I'd like to start out. First off, a lot of people don't even know I have a brother. I mention him all the time.
I mention him more than you do.
You do? That's cool.
At the end of my show.
At the end of the show? Oh, yeah, good. Yes, I've heard those. Yeah, there's some friendly ribbing. I think it's friendly.
I don't know. I'm not there, I guess. I don't what.
Oh, it's not about you.
Everything usually
yeah.
is.
Yeah, you're the hero in the tale.
Honestly, it is fair because I wouldn't have ever gone to Vision with Eric Ziegler 1 year and gotten to know each other. I wouldn't have gone to Apex 1 year. And it was the first time ever at Apex. Got plugged in with Matt. You were there, but Eric Ziegler pulled me into that dinner. It was a special dinner for a number of reasons. Harvey Chan was there.
Is that the one where I got, she was ready to throw me out the window?
That could be any dinner with you.
Yeah, it doesn't really narrow it down.
No, yes. It was. I think that one was the one where you're picking on the waitress because she had a very high-pitched voice.
I held the wine glass up, and Harvey looks at me, and he's like, what are you doing? See if I'm going to see if she can shatter it. And it just slayed the table. Yeah, then she was threatening me with a knife. So
I don't think it was really threatening. I just think she was holding it and then was making a decision.
First time I remember going out to dinner with you, Matt, we celebrated your birthday, even though it wasn't your birthday.
Gibson Steakhouse?
Yeah.
Yeah, I misunderstood. Speaking
of communication.
Yeah. Speaking of communication, I misunderstood the how the end of the song. They were saying happy birthday to you with a lot of emphasis on the to you. Yeah, and it sounded like something else to me.
Sounded angry.
It did. A lot of anger, a lot of pent up frustration from certain patrons, not me.
But that was the best non-birthday I remember.
This is the thing. There's some familiarity here, which I think is important to draw out. Like, you guys have known each other quite a long time now, but the way you actually first got connected, it wasn't even at an industry event, as I understand it. There were some early events, of course, but there was a Skype, the Skype days. Before, like, social media ever took off, there was that.
Yeah, the reality of that is that all started on IATN chat. That was the birthplace. And I think we've talked about it before in either posts on social media on other networks and other podcasts where IATN, when it first started, it was like the creme de la creme because you had the people seeking other, I hate to say same thinking, more like same wondering, same searching type of people that they really wanted. Yeah. I mean, it was loaded. We could name drop for an hour the people on there. One of the benefits, I guess, or features of IATN was a chat room. And in there, you know, one day I was just messing around in the chat room, right? And that's where I ended up hanging out a lot. Like, a lot of my time after work was spent in there. Well, okay, IATN gets popular. It's a powerful tool. There's a ton of information in there. And they have this tech help section, which is kind of email driven, where you submit a request for help. Hey guys, got this car, VIN number, year, make, model, blah, 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 blah. And people would comment like, check this, check this. I bet you it's this. This is how you would test this, blah, blah, blah. And you could search it. It was a very powerful tool. It was kind of like Identifix in some regards, but also less expensive. So you have people going around preaching the word. You got to get on ITN. You got to get on ITN. Then it starts diluting the pool, which sounds like a major dig, but it's just the reality. That's how everything works like that. If you have a professional sports like league and you start out with four teams, those four teams are stacked. But if you make it 20 teams, it gets diluted because it has to, right? That doesn't mean the 20th team or the last man on the roster on the every team is just not worth being a professional athlete. It's just, it dilutes the pool. It has to. And that's what IATN happened.
Well, that's what social media is becoming too these days. It's so easy to find. It's not a challenge to find it. It doesn't take the effort as much to reach out and look for that. And otherwise, you're learning to diagnose. And that's where I really think that this is an interesting story for both of you, is that you, in your earlier days of learning to become truly masters at diagnosing, using oscilloscopes, understanding waveforms, those sort of things happened in a vacuum for a little while. Like, people were isolated and could not easily get help. And the network of support, that's what I witnessed when I was seeing Sean start to really dive into the diagnostics. And once he found that network of other people that are learning as well, that's when things really took off. And Sean, how did you get introduced to it?
Even before IATN, I don't know, Craig, you might remember him, Jay Myring. I don't know if you know him either. He sold MasterTech scan tools. And this is like late 90s. Oh, I was still on
Vitronic sales rep.
That yep, Vitronic sales rep. And he had once a month, a MasterTech club would get together. I think we used to get together at the community college. And he would buy pizzas for a group of guys. And I mean, he was selling without selling, but he would show the Vitronic MasterTech tool, which is very similar, like a Tech 2 or something as far as capability. And we never owned one. We never bought that because it was still an aftermarket tool. It was powerful on Asian stuff, I remember. So he would run through some examples of bidirectional controls, and he would pull out an amp clamp, and he would show us fuel pump, current ramping. I mean, we're talking late 90s here. He's like, this is valuable for testing, you know, fuel pumps. And it's like, wow, this is, you know, I'm still in high school. I'm just an idiot. I didn't know anything. But it took a few years of going to those and him kind of beating that drum for it to sink in that, oh, you can see a lot without, there's a lot going on in electronics that you can't see, obviously. And there's a lot more to it than just the digital readout on a DVOM. That led to, like, Matt was saying, IATN and other people talking about it, which leads to, you know, you see people locally to you on IATN as well. I didn't do too much of the chat like you did, Matt, but it was a lot of, initially I was posting under our dad's name because the account was under his name. And eventually then I switched to my own account. You know, the tech help was fun. The forums were a big spot where I spent a lot of lunch breaks and after hours. But then Ryan Coyman, who was a tech at the time before working at Standard Motor Products now, was just like a top tech in the area and introduced me to some more like-minded guys. Some were local, some were all over like you, Matt. And we that led to the Skype group. And I don't remember the problem initially. It was some sort of caravan with a crank sensor issue. And I wanted to prove the issue. And all we had at the time was a DRB3 and a DVOM. I think we had like a snap-on graphing multimeter as well. And I wanted to get a waveform. I was like, well, the signal puts out, this should be a square wave. How do I get a square wave? I didn't know how to set this up. So led to some forum searching. It led to a local instructor that did some one-on-one training that we decided to pay for, Roland Trowbridge. I would meet him at Roland. Like 5 a.m. for like 4 days a week at the shop. We would cover mode 6 and the emissions, like stuff that as a transmission guy, we don't talk about ever, like drivability, secondary, primary waveforms. And, you know, we talked about lab scopes and, you know, a routine of, you know, things to check. And so that led to a bigger world of automotive than just transmissions and understanding electronics in general. So he was instrumental for that. And that just opened the door to more questions. And guys like Matt, and yeah, Harvey back in the day when hybrids started coming on scene and five gas analysts and all this other stuff. It was just, you can go as deep as you want in the industry. If you find the right people and curious people and guys that have the same questions and better yet answers and that can lead you to some resources, the sky's the limit.
Interesting how it's still a handshake business at the beginning of the story too, with Jay coming in like that. It's easy to forget about those components too. All of a sudden you start traveling and your network grows exponentially. Once you're at a conference, become friends with a few people and then it just explodes. But
well, call me old fashioned, but it beats Facebook or, I mean, I'm not even on a lot of social media. So those real connections where anyone can share a screen, they can get on a computer and talk, but you know, having this guy hook up to a car in front of us, dropping pizza underneath the hood of a car. So, and just, you know, looking at things and getting real with it was way more tactile and beneficial than, you know, just some chat room.
So Matt, your initial forays into this too, like you, I know you as a trainer and I think most people who know you now know you as an expert on there, but there was, and I listened to your episode when you were interviewing John Thornton, part one and part two.
Do you like a tech or something?
How'd you land that? That's amazing.
Lots of money.
Oh, hearing John's stuff on the presentation too, I was listening to that. I was like, oh, so good. I would have to interview him on the same topic, but you did so good. I won't have to.
If he'll talk to you, do it, because that was important to me because I just don't feel many people really understood the effort, but also historically put into his presentations, mm-hmm. his education style, just the intention level. And then, I mean, honestly, you have to really appreciate his wife and kids for allowing him the gift of his time to us. So he missed out on a lot of stuff to give us the opportunity to be way better. I don't know. I think about that and that hits pretty hard. I'm ecstatic that he is where he is and is able to enjoy it now.
Yeah, I feel remiss in not mentioning him too, because there's been a lot of nights in his classes over the years. He could teach the phone book and you would learn something. What's his style?
His style. The bar I hold all trainers, truly impressive, but a mentor in those early times too, Matt, is what I was hearing. Absolute mentor.
I had read his articles. He had a column, shared a column with Gary Gums of Hood Service Magazine. Mm. Mm-hmm. They called it Diagnostic Dilemmas, and they would take turns every other month. And it got to the point where I'd quick look to see who wrote it. And if it was John, I'd kept it. And if it was Gary's, I didn't. And that's not a dig on Gary. It just wasn't my thing. And I know a lot of people read his stuff, Gary's stuff, and it was very instrumental. So that's great. John's, I would read those over and over and over and over. And one time, I don't know if it was his doing, the magazine's doing, they accidentally put his email address in there.
The AOL one?
Yep. I had a Chrysler Conquest, which is a rebadged Mitsubishi Sterian, kind of a sporty car, turbocharged, looks mean, like fast, mean. It's killing me. It was just killing me. And I broke down and emailed him. And he was so nice to kind of walk me through the process. He didn't give me the answer. He knew what was wrong with it. He knew it. He'd seen it before. But he walked me through the process. And I think my wanting to go through the process helped. So then he helps me out. I want to repay him. I ask him if he does training classes, that if I could get him up there, there'd be a way to get some money in his pocket. And he said he did. And he came up to Minneapolis. And at that time, he taught on the south side of the Twin Cities, Minneapolis-St. Paul, and on the northern side of the Minneapolis-St. Paul. And he did that for a few years. And I, of course, went and asked him to lunch. And he said yes. And a friendship formed, you know? And man, that's just one of those surreal things when somebody refers to you as a friend.
You don't want to ruin the chance of a friendship by saying you're a friend.
It's like Sean, right? Yeah. I don't go around telling people Sean's my friend because he'll tell them like, I wouldn't be
friends. That's bad for your image.
Yeah, are you kidding?
Yeah, it's like the first one to say I love you in a relationship or something. Thank you.
Right? But yeah, and that's what happened. And before the friendship, really, even just sitting there at lunch talking about cars, really, and being working in the bays, and then him just kind of looking at me and going like, you should really find a way down to Indianapolis and go to this Linder Technical Services class. You should go to Guru's school. It's like a domino effect or a snowball or however you want to, where it just one thing leads to another. And it's like Sean saying, like between IETN chat, which evolved into a Skype group, and meeting people, going to events, and just forming these friendship zones almost.
Handshake and an open door. Handshake and an open door. Yeah.
And then I get cursed by being introduced to you.
I've always wanted to go to Linder Tech because I would read the books. Like Rollin gave me some of the old manuals. Like, this is amazing training. This looks great. And I went to go sign up and it was like, they didn't do it. I just missed it by a year. Like, I think between the last one. That's when Bob Hite kicked off the CAN conference was because they stopped doing the Linder Tech down in Chicago.
Yeah. They reconditioned fuel injectors and it was a booming business for a while. And then they just stopped using those injectors and stuff evolves. It doesn't break the same way and they don't break hardly at all.
Yeah.
And the prices drop to where you just replace them. So all of a sudden that dries up. And, you know, he was at that age too, where I think it's a lot of work put together all the events and he had other interests like racing at the Salt Flats with his flathead Ford. That was his passion.
Sounds a little more fun than cleaning injectors.
So, yeah, it was just end of an era. But you got an attempt to reboot that by Bob Hype and ASA Illinois.
Yep.
And the Chicago Area Networking Conference, CAN Conference.
Sponsored by the EPA, the air or whatever they were called.
Air Care, right?
Yeah.
Illinois Air Care, I think.
The top shops in the industry don't stop at one location. At the Institute, we work with shop owners who want to expand, whether it's opening a second shop, acquiring new businesses, or building systems for long-term growth. Some of our clients are aiming for hundreds of shops, and we're helping them get there. Ready to scale? To get started, visit weareintheinstitute.com/business-assessment. Hey friends, as you know, I'm a proud member of the AutoFlow team, and let me tell you, we've changed how business is done for auto shops everywhere. We support your client experience before, during, and after the work is done. Imagine this: timely updates sent directly to your clients, branded digital vehicle inspections, and seamless communication from start to finish. That's why shops love AutoFlow. And hey, with those 5-star reviews rolling in, you'll wonder how you ever managed without us. Take an important next step and take your auto shop to the next level. Visit www.autoflow.com. Get on board with an AutoFlow trial. Ready to boost your auto repair shop's success? ShopDog Marketing is here to help you. We put customers first using AI to create standout content that ranks. Harness the power of mobile first and voice search and let our expert team help you. Sweeten your revenue with more car count. ShopDog Marketing offers a free guide on using AI to drive more repair orders. Get your guide today and watch your auto repair shop thrive. Visit ShopDogMarketing.com. Inbound has exclusively served independent auto repair shops with expert communication solutions for years. Now, our robust VoIP platform ensures you stay connected while our industry-leading AI analytics take your business to the next level. We provide the tools you need to understand your customers and optimize every interaction. Choose Inbound. For proven expertise and unmatched innovation, visit callinbound.com and discover the difference we can make. Credit card surcharging sounds effective, but is the single most damaging action to your shop in the last decade? If you're surcharging, you're tarnishing your reputation and losing customers as we speak. Express is the only 0% fee option to surcharging that your customers already know how to use. No tricks, no hidden fees, just a smarter way for auto shops to keep what's yours and do right by your customers. Book a free consultation with Express today by visiting myexpress.io and see how the most successful shops in the country are flipping the script on credit card processors. I see a lot of shops, they're still struggling to have technicians stay or even come to their facilities that have the skill set that you have. I think you guys can probably legitimately troubleshoot just about anything that goes down the road.
I don't know if I could. Matt could, for sure. I'm well out of practice.
I can't troubleshoot people yet.
Matt is working in a repair facility.
Yeah, Matt actually works.
Yeah, Sean and I both have cushy stay-at-home jobs now. Well, Sean, you're managing a team of how many technicians now?
56 right now. Two more set to start within the next month.
It's Mobile Auto Solutions. It's like a lot more states than it used to be.
I have Michigan, Ohio, New York, Pennsylvania, and Maryland right now.
Wow. Yeah, I just remember when, hey, you're going to be the Michigan manager. That was it.
I think I know somebody that lives in Maryland.
Ooh, could use someone in Baltimore, man. Mike
Marshall?
He's in Maryland. I thought he was New Hampshire. He's New Hampshire.
That's so close over there.
That's an inside joke. It's kind of like Brian Pollock. And
he would drive. Yeah.
It's like an inside joke. I don't know why.
Yeah. I think you have a lot of those.
I just entertain myself, honestly.
Well, here's the thing. And this is what I'm seeing, because when I'm working with shops, it's usually on like software and all those sort of things. But I get to meet a lot of members of the team. And I see a lot of shops have, they're really good techs, but they don't get to develop the skills the same way I see you guys having started out. And I think it's a shop problem. I really do. I think like we can send people to these events. They can meet people like you now. They can go to courses. They can learn a lot of really great stuff in there. You could even equip yourself with the tools. But I don't see the shops creating the space for you to practice the new skills, because time is money and money is time. And it's a hit on productivity when we have to let you learn.
I was going to say, or the time, never mind space, but what's the motivation for the tech to do it?
You start getting into like case by case situations and stuff like that. Basis is that I don't know everybody's the way they're operating. You know what I mean?
Everybody's a little different, but a lot of them are the same.
And are they running really thin margins? And even if they aren't, then is it, I want to be careful how I say greed, because I don't want it to necessarily come off nefarious, but you're trying to make the most you can, you know, make hay when you can make hay and
as quick as you can.
I empathize with that, but it's also short-term thinking in that there has to be a certain level of investment for tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And that is empowering them to kind of do a little bit of research, try different things. Like, okay, normally I would diagnose this circuit with this test tool, you know, but I really do need to learn how to use this other tool. So normally we use a test light and a voltmeter. Fine, that'll work. But I need to learn how to use an oscilloscope, because down the road, someday, that is going to bail me out. That is going to be the way.
Yeah, we learned that slow. I was on the wrong end of that curve initially when I was service advisor and Sean was trying to learn those skills. You can empower a technician all you want to go learn these things, but if you don't emancipate him from other responsibilities or other pressures, that stuff won't happen. And I feel like we were just so bad at it in the early days, and it caused a lot of frustration.
And there has to be a mutual respect for it. The tech has to respect the time. Like, you can't sit there and go, I'm on hour number three messing around. Maybe not the right word, but still.
We're practicing.
Unproductive 3 hours. Please understand that is taking advantage of what they're trying to gift you here. Yeah. So now can we find a happy medium where this is legitimate time spent to try to learn how to access this ability? Or is there a way to compensate to come in after hours or stay a little bit later?
Well, I feel like that's what he ended up doing, right, Sean? I
couldn't do anything 8 to 5.
Oh, it was terrible. I feel like we didn't recognize this early on, too, family business dynamics, but your wife and kids, too, have felt it.
Yeah, well, Rowland had a saying, right. And it was an hour extra beyond your working day, an hour extra you could learn something new or maybe kind of maintain what you have and grow a little bit. You know, 2 hours extra a day, you start to progress and become more proficient and expert in something. But if you spend 3 hours a day or more on something, on a topic and learning it, then you can truly master it. And I guess the moral of the story is it takes time of your own initiative to do something. And we have to be fair to the customers. Like, it's not fair to expect the customer to pay for our learning on the job either. So what do we do? And you both hit it already. I mean, really, it is an investment. Every business is in the business of being in business. So they have to make money. I get that. But, you know, we like to compare ourselves to the medical community. We're practicing working on cars too. You said practicing, right? But, you know, we don't have malpractice insurance. And when we have a comeback on something, you know, it's coming out of our pocket. So where's the middle ground? Look at these poor guys that are flat rate and working at a dealership. You know, they get point whatever, 0.3 to diagnose a intermittent whatever on a new car that's under warranty. So there's no carrot there for them to necessarily spend the time. You know, what's the payout for them to become a master of figuring something out quickly if they're only going to get 3/10 for it?
Problem somewhere in this assembly. We can just replace the assembly, have an easy sell there. Yeah, that's so common.
As a boss or a manager or a shop owner, do you want a bunch of idiots working for you either? I mean, I don't think so. So you have to give them room to grow and equipment to succeed, and then hopefully just hire people with a drive that want to better themselves and spend that time.
When you guys have always heard it said all the time too, what happens if I train them and they leave?
Yeah,
what happens if you train them? What if you don't and they stay?
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
It gets back to short-term thinking. And even as a tech, your pay plan is probably based heavily on production. So the reward is crank it out. Okay, well, if you're doing some diag and you do like doing diag, that could be a very short window of opportunity, because if you don't continue to train yourself some way, somehow, both, you know, through a learning situation, either online or in person, all that, like education itself, and then on the job, like putting this stuff into practice. I don't get an opportunity to use the Maya scope a lot, but when I do, I need to take advantage of that, or I need to take a few minutes to try to do that and start to assimilate this into my process and get better and better at it. And I know I keep picking on scopes, but there's so many other things, like just paging through scan data, just scrolling through scan data, just looking at it and trying to figure out what it all means and how it all works together. And are you going to figure it out on that car? Probably not. But over time, and then also your own time interacting with people like Sean or however many other people.
Or you.
That's important. So one, the short-term thinking is, if I don't do that, my window of cranking out the hours on Diag is short, because in the future I won't be able to, because I don't have the skill set. I will be heavily reliant on databases or people bailing me out or guesswork, or we just ship the car and keep the stuff I can do trying to come in, but those numbers keep dwindling. So it's a short-term plan. The other thing is back to that respect thing, where the business management needs to respect the tech and the future while future planning, as well as the tech has to understand what pays the frickin' bills. So, right? Profit. That's all there is to it. However that's generated and at what level, all that is case by case.
But there's ancillary benefits, you know, customers trust you and getting it right the first time, less spending on parts and other things too. So there's an upside in taking a little more time to figure out.
But as a manager, can I have the awareness of this person is worth, like, I see that spark. I see that thing, right? That they want to learn, that drive.
They've got the initiative.
The initiative, the desire, the passion, tenacity, whatever. I see that, the determination. Well, I don't want to squash that out. How do I perpetuate that? And is it having conversations? And I want you to take time to do a little bit of this. Not a lot. We can't afford it. But we're going to do what we can. And then if you're going to spend time after work doing these things, you're going to bring that car back in and re-diagnose it in a different way, or you're going to sit on platforms, whatever that may be, actually learning. Maybe it is Facebook. Maybe it is online training from whatever vendor, Napa Auto Tech, something like that. I understand you're taking your personal time to do this, and I want to respect your personal time. So can we meet somewhere in the middle? Because you probably should invest some of your time to be better at what you do, but I don't want you to invest all of it, because I also respect that. And you're helping me in the long run, and I want you to be a part of this long term. Now, is it, hey, take a few hours off early on Friday, you know, or every other Friday, leave at noon, or whatever it is, just come to an agreement. It doesn't have to be specific. You two can come together and understand what it is. And then maybe some of the other techs are going like, oh, hey, that seems like a sweet deal. Why do they get that? Well, look what they're doing. They're coming in after hours. They're staying until 6, 7 o'clock at night. Yeah. Re-diagnosing a problem to learn how this system works better.
I'll buy you.
So I want to perpetuate that. And then they're like, yeah, I'd rather just go fishing. Well, that's fine too. It's not a dig.
Yeah, the lunches. Yeah, Sean, I know you were doing that a lot too. Yeah.
I'll eat my lunch at my desk watching a video or some just-in-time training or whatever. Two birds, one stone. You got to eat. You might as well take something in while you're doing it.
And Sean and I were so spoiled. Yeah. To have the access to the people we had access to.
Yep.
Like there's Harvey Chan, there's Aaron Kepin, phone call away, Thornton, Mana, the name goes on and on, but we had access. Koyman was a terrific resource for so long. Baumhart, just keep going. Spoiled.
Drop the names, bringing back some memories.
Spoiled.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like that sort of culture is still there. I think that it's just, somehow we aren't as deliberate in cultivating it the way that we had to be in the past. And this is actually one of those things that where technology will atrophy some of those muscles for us. And this is a communication podcast, right? We talk about this all the time, and deliberate communication versus this automated or the easy access, or you just happen to scroll because you're doom scrolling and then maybe you found something helpful. But how many times you go on Facebook to learn and then you end up wasting 2 hours? I mean, things are good until they're bad. I deleted Facebook recently. It's just, ugh.
Well, we're talking about communication straight up. You got large language model chatbots that are getting better and better and better about taking the first wave of customer contact. And the upside is now my service advisor doesn't have to deal with that. They can focus on this other stuff. And I get that. That's reasonable. But also you're paying a price. You're going to pay a steep price. And the same goes where when we start seeing probably not large language models, but machine learning, probably a little more into diagnostic.
Those specialized models. Yep, exactly. It'll be trained for that purpose. Yep.
Correct. And that's an important designation or a thing to understand is that they are very focused. They're very good at what they do, that one thing. Well, they're going to see more and more diagnostic decisions taken out of people's hands, and therefore that muscle, that ability starts atrophying. So we already see that with training on whatever, using a lab scope, people, if they don't get to do it right away after class, it atrophies. Well, the same thing is going to happen if you don't have to figure anything out anymore. It walks you through the process or gives you a probability map, and you just replace parts based off that. Now the system doesn't work. It has no idea what's wrong with this car, and you haven't had to figure anything out for 6 months.
Now what?
Yeah, nothing's even unexpected anymore.
So you're watching people using the large language models for communication at the front desk.
Yeah, we're already getting worse at writing emails now because it does it for us.
They can't say what they mean.
Not to use it for that. All the mistakes are mine in an email. Those are
those are genuine.
Yeah, that's how you know what's Yeah, you joked it. You hit me on the apostrophe here for the. Yeah, it's like, who you want to put the apostrophe? I was like, I don't. It's an extra keystroke.
God's comma, man.
I had to have my grammar quick guide here to know when to even use it. So
no, I think you're hitting it right though, Matt, because I'm already starting to hear people like, yeah, well, why would I want to invest so much in learning that skill when pretty soon this is going to do it for me? Why would I want to bother?
It's such a misnomer. You know, I see so many people, and actually people that are looked up to because of either their educators, presenters, trainers, or even in the industry itself, as they're just looked at as experts, and they're spouting off that pick your large language model, ChatGPT, Gemini, Grok. Yeah, so many of them. It's like, oh, they're like Google on steroids. Like, no, they're not. They're not even a little bit.
I mess with the Gems and Gemini, and you have to feed it a lot of information to be able to do what you are hoping it can or turn it into. So it's a process to educate AI even into shaping what you want.
The prompting requires some talent itself in this stage. Yeah.
Yep. You can spend as much time trying to feed it enough information to write whatever it is you wanted to write that you could have just wrote it yourself.
Yep.
Dude, I ran into this the other day working with it. Chris challenged our team to leverage AI more because it will be a necessary skill set for a modern workforce to know how AI tools work. But it's not easy and it's not always fun. And sometimes it's a little heartbreaking when it does things that you enjoy doing better than you.
No, I refuse to let it communicate for me. That communication needs to be intentional for sure.
Can't automate relationships is what I keep hearing.
No, I mean, automating Google app scripts, by all means, I'll write some software with it because I can't write software and it can, you know, if it screws up, I'll feed it a better prompt to do what I want to do, but I don't want it to. This is not AI generated conversation. You know, that scares the hell out of me. Someone being a deep faked and or video called or whatever.
It's a legitimate fear. I've tried to explain to my parents that someday they are going to get a phone call from one of their kids or grandkids who are in dire straits.
Yeah, it's really a Terminator.
They need help. They need help fast and they need money. They're so sorry. It will sound just like them.
Sarah Connor.
And they're, yep. And explain to my parents, you're going to have to hang up and call them back or text them like, is everything all right?
Yeah, that's a real good tip. One of the things I wanted to bring in for this conversation was where you guys are at right now. Matt, you're teaching in front of classrooms of really skilled technicians very rarely. Ah, I see this all the time at the events I go to.
All the time at those events.
It's because Matt's not done learning.
All the time, 10% of the time.
At least every March.
They keep having me back. I don't know. They have to raise their standards.
Yeah, and Sean, you're working with people daily. You're doing it from your home. You don't have to really travel. We never see you at events anymore. We do need to fix that.
I should be. Don't say that. If my boss hears that, I should be traveling more and getting the stores. But I live in spreadsheets and we try to get the industry. We fight industry issues all day and trying to get places to understand the complex technology that we're trying to address and fix it in a manner that is safe for everybody. It's a constant evolution and constant conversation to be had. It's the world I live in now. I'm not armpit deep into some tranny fluid anymore. Although some days
you still miss it, right? Like sometimes
some, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Then we go visit dad for a minute at the shop and
yeah, I don't miss dealing with the general public. That's for sure. Being on the bench was great. You know, if someone comes in and you have to go take a road test and you're in the middle of a valve body. No, yep, that's like tough. Are you still wrenching, Matt, or getting a scope?
Yeah. But you as a tech get to work on one thing at a time, finish that thing.
Oh, that's great. That's very fulfilling. That's more immediately fulfilling than anything else. The instant gratification of problem, fix, solution, and happy customer at the end, hopefully. So that's, yeah. Are you still wrenching, Matt, at all, or hooking up a scope?
I mean, I haven't. So
are you more
wrenching?
Cerebral?
Very minimal, but on cars every day for the most part. The reason I hesitate to say all day, every day is just because you guys saw my makeshift laboratory.
We saw the microscope behind you.
Yeah, that segment of my world is growing. I don't want to blow it out of proportion. Like, I don't want to sound like I'm on certain levels of like a Tommy Oliva and those guys that are really doing this a lot. But the module level type stuff has been growing, making used modules work on different cars, repairing modules or instrument clusters, which I mean, they're modules at circuit board level type stuff has been growing because there isn't a new one available or the new or reman is cost prohibitive, something of that nature. That has grown exponentially. I still don't want to imply it's even every day. Last week was every day. Every day I had something to do. This week, maybe not so much every day, but a couple times already. So I'm doing stuff on cars and fixing cars or diagnosing more so. I'll figure it out and then somebody else fixes it. And then more of the electrical.
But I think that's cool too. I like to think that's where I would be if I was still actually a tech, but
especially in transmission world, because that's where we do a lot of it.
Yeah. And a lot of our industry is very, at least our company, you know, very OE centric, but we did a lot of aftermarket fixes at the transmission level to, you know, shift kits and other Sonics modifications and everything else to try to improve or fix a problem short of replacing something with brand new. So, you know, I used to think back in the early 2000s, you'd have a 2002 Ford Taurus. It's like, all right, it's just a car now. Someday somebody's going to want to restore this thing, like that 55 Bel Air that somebody brought in, although a Taurus is not a Bel Air, I'll give you that. But what's someone going to do if they want to restore this car in 30 years? And you can't because nothing's real. It's just everything becomes junk and scrap unless somebody can take a chip out, swap a module around and make it work again.
And we're seeing it on cars that are like 7, 8 years old.
Yeah, which is scary, right? So really what chance does a 30-year-old car have?
I forgot to mention, not like it's a big deal, but Sean probably get a kick out of it, is I'm probably doing 3 to 4 ADOS calibrations. And I mean cars.
Good for you.
Per day. So some cars are a single calibration. Some are, you know, three. Yeah.
Well, when you want to do that full time all the time, you let us know. I'm sorry. I'm always hiring.
Gist of it, though, isn't it, Sean? Because the type of people that you are trying to hire in the line of work you're in with, it's clean work, high tech work, ADOS work, and that sort of stuff. The demand is so significant that you always need someone there, and the skills are not always currently there. Is that getting easier yet, or to train someone from scratch, or is it still you need this?
It's getting longer to train someone from scratch, which because there's just a lot of nuances, especially when you take into consideration collision repair is a lot different than mechanical repair.
Yes.
Now you're beholden to a lot of procedures that the OEMs want you to do that don't seem related to maybe the loss or the repairs that brought the car in. So, you know, a car could have a rear end hit and is structurally repaired. Well, that might trigger front end calibrations, or maybe an alignment triggers other calibrations. So, you know, in the mechanical realm, we took something off, we put something on. That required programming, or that requires a relearn, or what, you know, it's very related to what we touch in the collision world. It's harder to teach that because you have to think big picture. You have to pull a lot of information depending on the OE, because no similarity or common ground between OEMs, and there's different documents and resources. So, you know, you have to pull a lot of information on every car that you're working on and consider the repair and the loss and repair plan effectively. So that's tough, but I'd prefer to take a mechanical tech any day, someone that can diagnose, someone that think their way through a problem,
maybe knows how to read the repair procedure.
Yeah, if you can read service information and you can follow steps, I mean the calibrations are just procedural, but you need someone that can think at a high level to take it all in big picture and put it into a repair plan, follow that through. So yeah, it takes a long time to teach somebody that, even when they're an A tech master certified mechanical tech, which not everybody is, which is fine. But, you know, we have the world at our fingertips. There's so much service information out there and resources that you just have to know what questions to ask, and you can find the answer if you can ask a question.
Yeah, and then you just ask ChatGPT and you were, no.
Yeah.
And well, Sean will probably reach through the screen and choke me, but a lot of like the calibrations themselves, when they go well, go normal, go as expected, they're easier than ever.
Oh, yeah.
When things don't go well.
Yeah. Now what?
Now you got to kind of understand what it is that it's trying to do. And I'm telling you, man, ADOS, the auto repair business or industry itself is kind of the Wild West, but ADOS is the Wild West, like major Wild West.
There's a lot of companies doing it. It was the new and sexy thing for a while. And, you know, when there's new and sexy and unregulated, you know, the world's their oyster for making money. And eventually the insurance companies catch on. We've seen invoices from vendors that charge crazy amounts for no real proof to what they're doing with things. So it's scary from that front. But back to the mechanical, you know, we see ADAS technicians. We've hired technicians from other ADAS companies. And it's harder from that perspective because they're, you know, the key word in ADAS is systems, you know, advanced driver assist systems. So that's why I love hiring techs with a mechanical background, because most of them at least have some sort of systems understanding. They're drivability guys, heck, even if you're slinging brakes and doing heavy duty undercar work, you still know more about the systems that are interacting with the front radar for, you know, if they're applying brakes, they're applying power to the engine or cutting power. I mean, these things truly work with every other system on the car. So you have to understand the systems. It's not just the radar that we're worried about calibrating. It's how is it working with the whole car? Is everything working the way it should? Because you have a problem in one system, the customer complains that their safety systems are disabled. Well, it's that EVAP code on the Subaru that just disabled the eyesight and the park assist and everything else. So, yeah. I mean, it's a cascading system of failures. So you have to understand, we've done some weird, crazy diags on complaints that were ADAS related, but had nothing to do with ADAS at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's rather nebulous.
Yeah.
Active grill shutters.
Yeah. A lot of ambient air temps. And
Yeah.
But these stuff will throw a wrench in a typical shop's day all the time. If they're typical maintenance shops, maintenance, repair, and service, and they have these sort of things, I see it so often. They're just chasing their tails on it, and no one's there to do it, except maybe they have a mobile guy they call. Great. And that's great business for those guys. Point is, sky's the limit right now for the guys who understand the whole systems. And I think it's opportunity.
Yeah. And we're barely scratching the surface on stuff that so very many have no idea. They have no idea what's coming. They have no idea what's already here.
Well, and how old are some of the cars that people struggle with? You're struggling on 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old cars at times. Try doing a calibration on a vehicle or justifying the calibration with an insurance company on brand new 2025, 2026 models, and the manufacturer hasn't updated their repair manuals for the car yet. I mean, that's the kind of crap that body shops, some mobile techs and, you know, mechanical stores that are working closely with body shops and see brand dang new cars. That's the kind of crap people are feeling.
Well, or a critical calibration or measurement that's buried in service info. Like the manufacturers themselves, even for their own self-interest, don't make it widely known to their techs and the public. I think it would help the image of everybody if they would be very open about any collision that's beyond cosmetic. These things have to be done. And sure, radar calibration, camera calibration. We have to measure the steering column length. Sometimes that's readily available and easy to show somebody that this is required. Sometimes you have to sit there and dig to find it. Right.
I had a shop ask for that information one time only.
It's brutal.
Yep.
And why not make some of this very easy to get to? Not just for me. Of course, I want it accessible to me. I want it accessible to the vehicle owner so they can go to the car manufacturer website and see like, oh, they weren't lying. Okay. They're not trying to pull one over on me. This is required by the manufacturer. I can see it there plain as day, a mission statement or something of that nature.
Yeah, transparency has been the issue that we're talking about all the time. I deal with digital inspections of showing people their actual condition of the car. Like, what about transparency in that sort of data so that we can communicate regarding the complexity of these systems and the things that we need to deal with? Yeah.
100%.
I feel like that is a job for AI, right? Like, this data needs to be somewhere, train the AI how to access the data very, very quickly, and that'll free up some time.
That would be where it's good too.
It would be, but we should all be able to prove whatever we're doing. Like, I'm a firm believer, prove it. Like, my favorite customers back in the day were, you know, I had two customers ever that said, well, prove it. How do you know this needs this? You know,
right.
One guy had a worn down Camaro. Well, I can show you the in-cylinder transducer. I can show you the waveform and explain it. You know, people that say, prove it. I love that. And we in the collision industry, you know, a lot of people will bag on the insurance companies because they're pushing back on stuff. Well, they should be pushing back a little. They're just saying, prove it. Why does it need it? There's nothing wrong when someone says, prove it. We should all be able to prove something.
Yeah. See, that's what I was trying to say back in the day when you said it was a bad computer and you were still learning how to diagnose. And I said, what are you going to check if it's not the computer?
Yeah. What's next? Well, I don't know. Yeah, let's start here.
If we want to sound really professional, we would say it's evidence-based.
Yeah. What's the evidence?
Evidence.
The current information I have right now, I need a new part to make sure that this part's back.
Yeah, justifying your findings, though. Yeah.
That's what factory service manuals say, replace with no good part. That's the step I'm at.
We have to be honest. Sometimes it is cheaper to just slam the new part in than it is to test. That's the reality.
My son had a misfire the other day. I told him to swap the coils first, see if it moves on the cylinder. And hey, that gets you going quick in the right direction.
Swaptronics is a test that helps with park assist sensors, that helps with coils. You know, that is a test. Move it. Did the fault move or not?
It, it doesn't fit everything, but when it does, why bash it? It's legitimate.
That's where the beauty of knowing, you know, not, you know, trouble trees are trouble at times, right? And the end result's always the same, you know, replace part. But once you have systems understanding, you create your own trouble trees in your own head. So there's shortcuts gained, there's lessons learned, and you're a fool if you don't apply all those. So why wouldn't you swap those coils? Why wouldn't you swap that park assist sensor to see if the fault moves first? Why would you go testing for different signals at every at the connector and every connector related to it or compared to known good? And when you have a known good right here, just, you know, that's a valid technique.
It's valid. We got to be efficient. And that's the thing is like, and I think you guys hit this really well. I think shop managers are in the middle of a difficult scenario of client expectations and technician needs. That's tough. And it feels like, oh, sometimes you're going to create some conflict in the shop just because we aren't really making a plan together on how I can even package and present what you want to do in this particular scenario, complex or not, with this client and make it in a way that's fair and easily repeatable, whatever it is. This is where the time and the effort really has to go. And my advice has always been managers, service advisors should go to tech training with the techs on occasion. Not every time. It gets expensive, but I think they need to understand it.
Some of my, you know, the biggest mechanics are mechanics. Technicians are technicians. You know, it's some people are good with dealing with people and some aren't. But you also can't have somebody that's just a great communicator blowing a bunch of smoke up someone's butt just because they're dealing with the public and they're a great public speaker. You need to take the complex and make it simple. And John Thornton was a great example of that. I mean, he was teaching a bunch of newbies and guys who didn't go to college or maybe didn't graduate high school how to fix a modern high-tech car because you could take the complex and make it simple. That's not easy. You have to understand something very deeply to be able to do that and relate it to people. And I think if more service advisors could do that, communication would be a little more effective. Reviews would go up because, oh, this guy, this person explained it wonderfully to me. They could prove it. I feel very safe and comfortable with, you know, Matt Fanslow fixing my car, you know, that kind of thing. It's
nobody says that.
Yeah, it's never really happened.
Everybody says that.
Yes, absolutely. They do.
I'll drive to Minneapolis just so you can change my oil for me.
I might forget to put the new stuff in.
I know you know more about viscosities and oil ratings than I do anymore. So
I can rattle off all that stuff. I don't understand it.
Thanks for doing this with me today, guys. It's been great to have you guys in, well, sort of like at least the same virtual studio, if not the same room someday. We'll have to remedy that.
We will.
Not a dinner. That's just awkward with Matt.
Only if it's his birthday. And it always is. I want that free dessert. Matt always brings the free desserts.
Keep me entertained so I don't try to entertain myself. And then that's the problem.
That's good stuff. Awesome. Well, Matt, as a fellow podcaster on the channel, thanks for taking some time out of your busy day to join me. And I'd be happy to return the favor sometime when it's convenient for you. Sean, anytime. I think we do need to talk about actual broadcast because you used to do the radio show and some amazing things.
Oh, yeah, I know. I don't know if I could answer too many technical problems anymore.
Yeah, that was the auto talk show. So it was a call-in show, folks. And the one thing that we try not to do on the phone or the shop, they tried to do on the radio where we talk about what the problem could be on their car.
Yeah, there's a real dichotomy and personality split we had to enforce.
Yeah, worked out well. You guide them to a good shop we can refer, and it wasn't always our own, but some of the ones in the shop and the area.
People smell that BS a mile away. I know I would. You can't be self-promoting.
No, it always works better when you can point to someone else as an expert. Nice stuff.
You just ripped that off from Miracle on 34th Street.
Nice. Any final words for today, guys?
Nebulous, I thought.
Yeah, might as well end it the way we started.
Full circle.
No idea what we're talking about.
Yes, you do. Awesome. Well, hey, thanks so much, guys. And thanks, everyone, for listening to the show. I'm sure you enjoyed Matt and Sean. If you have something to add, please reach out to speakup@craigoneal.net. We do appreciate hearing from you. And we do appreciate hearing your topics that you'd be interested in hearing on this show. And remember to listen up on the other shows on the Aftermarket Radio Network, Carm Capriato's Remarkable Results Radio. Then there's this one, Diagnosing the Aftermarket A through Z with Matt Fonslow. And because he's here today, I'll be nice. It's a good show.
I got to actually tune into some podcasts, I think. I'm missing a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, F is for Fonslow in his show.
That's a good one. I'm going to use that.
Yeah, you should. Then Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest, the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast with Brian and Kim Walker, who I will see next week in Utah. Looking forward to that. And Coach Chris Cotton on the Weekly Blitz. Thanks again to our sponsors to make this show possible. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Sean, for joining me. And to our listeners, get out there, listen up, speak up, and hey, listen to your techs, especially.
You've been listening to Speak Up, Effective Communication with Craig O'Neill on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Craig on your favorite podcast listening app and on his YouTube channel. Let him know what you'd like him to speak up about. Craig is all for advancing the automotive service aftermarket.